Sigrid Schultz, correspondent for the Chicago Tribune and Mutual's American Observer in Germany, is ready now with a report from Berlin on the war situation as she sees it in the German capital. At this time, European broadcasts are subject to censorship at the point of origin. We take you now to Berlin, Germany.
Hello, Mutual Broadcasting System. This is Sigrid Schultz, the Berlin correspondent of the Chicago Tribune, speaking to you from Berlin. The map of Europe has changed with lightning-like rapidity in the past 10 days. If you follow events closely, and if you study the terms of the Franco-German, the Franco-Italian armistice agreements, you can also foresee important changes in the map of Africa and of Minor Asia, not to speak of the rumblings of a new storm forming over England, which all Germans tell you will soon see war as never before in her history. Opposite America, on the other side of the Atlantic, Germans now occupy the coasts which until 10 days ago were the coasts of independent France. And while the Germans vanquished the French army, moving westward, erasing the last traces of the Versailles Treaty, giant Russia was also moving westward from the Baltic to the Black Sea. Russia also wiped out a World War treaty when her troops occupied Bessarabia and the northern part of Bukovina. For a few hours last week, after the Russians presented an ultimatum for the return of Bessarabia to Romania, it looked as if a new war might be looming on the European horizon. The peaceful settlement of the Bessarabian conflict up to now shows that the Russo-German Treaty signed last August is still fully valid, despite those who claimed that the friendship between Hitler Germany and Stalin's Russia would not endure. Everybody had been expecting the increase in the Russian garrisons of the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, ever since the Soviets occupied part of Poland. In the meantime, Romania had made it a point to increase her deliveries to Germany on a big scale in order to escape the displeasure of powerful Germany and the charges that she was siding with the Western powers. She delivered such vast amounts of oil and grain that the trade surplus between Germany and Romania is strongly in Romania's favor. But in view of the understanding between Moscow and Berlin, she felt it wiser to sacrifice Bessarabia. The Germans have assured the Romanians and other countries, such as Sweden, which are eager to buy weapons from them, that weapons will be delivered to them. This will help reduce the trade surplus standing in favor of a number of Germany's smaller trade partners. The vast supplies of British and French arms the Germans conquered in France will make it comparatively easy for the Germans to carry out the promised deliveries. Incidentally, the Russians, when occupying Bessarabia and northern Bukovina, made it a point to advance with their best-equipped motorized units to show to the Western powers how strong they are, lest anyone should think that the Russian army had not fully recovered from her experiences in Finland last winter. The same as the Germans used parachute troops during their advance into the Netherlands and Belgium, the Russians landed parachute troops during their occupation of southern Bessarabia. The Russian parachutists took the town of Bolgrad in southern Bessarabia. While Germany and Russia have been moving their control westward in Europe on a comparatively big scale, Italy advanced her occupation forces only 50 kilometers or 31 miles westward into southern France. But with the French forces in Minor Asia in northern Africa ordered to cease battle by Maréchal Pétain, it is expected that Italy, which claims absolute leadership in the Mediterranean, will increase her holdings or influence in Minor Asia and in northern Africa. In Wiesbaden, the Armistice Committee of 1940, under the chairmanship of the German General von Schnupfnagel, is working out the details of the enforcement of the armistice of Compiègne and of Rome of 1940. Wiesbaden is a festive little spa which used to boast that it harbored the Kaiser's favorite opera house. In its Kursaal and promenades, the Grand Dukes of Old Russia and princes from all parts of Europe used to sport their jewelry and elegance in the days before the World War, with German officers in their glittering uniforms coming from the nearby garrisons to share in this social splendor. When the social elite of Europe started to feel the pinch of gout or rheumatism after the plentiful feasting customary in the old days, they would come to Wiesbaden to take the cure in the hot waters first discovered by the Romans. In the World War, serious patients took the place of the once powerful Grand Dukes and Princes, and after the war, inflation and foreign occupation cramped the spa's style. Then came the Depression. Foreign tourists and capitalists were at a premium. Under Hitler's regime, many workers of the Strength Through Joy movement came to Wiesbaden, hard-working men and women, trying to have as good a time as possible on the 80 cents a day which boarding housekeepers got for their room and board. The old ladies in Wiesbaden thought with longing of the days of their youth when Grand Dukes and Princes lent splendor to their hometown. But now, Wiesbaden is in the political limelight. The same French who occupied the Rhineland are in Wiesbaden working on the armistice terms they had to accept from Germany and Italy because their armies were defeated. In the banquet hall of Wiesbaden's most elegant hotel, dapper General Hunziker, who signed the armistice of Compiègne for France 10 days ago, is facing German and Italian officers and political experts. A big portrait of Hitler decorates the main wall and is surrounded by costly floral wreaths. It is assumed that in the course of these final armistice negotiations, the outline for the future peace agreement will become discernible. But for the moment, any discussion or conjectures about what the German and Italian conditions will be is absolutely taboo. The same as after the German campaign in Poland, rumors spread that there was a possibility that the warring nations might come to terms. Rumors are circulating in the capitals of Europe, especially in Rome, that a compromise may be reached between Germany and England. German official spokesmen declare loudly, quote, "This is the time when the guns speak," unquote. Chamberlain, in his address tonight, declared that whoever talked of peace was helping the enemy. The Völkische Beobachter, in its Sunday issues, publishes an article by Colonel Dr. Hesse of the German High Command under the heading, quote, "After the victory in France, the army is ready for new duties," unquote. The Frankfurter Zeitung talks of the duties which Italy must shoulder to establish her rule in the Mediterranean. The Frankfurter Zeitung stresses Germany's willingness to help the Italians carry out their plans in the Mediterranean. It is quite clear from previous happenings that even if the powers were considering the possibility of peace, they would continue to talk volubly and convincingly about their readiness for the big, major, decisive campaign. In the case of Germany, there can be no doubt about the readiness for the offensive at the moment when Hitler gives the sign to start. In the meantime, German economic circles, which sent their emissaries to France to view the booty seized from the English and the French, are returning to the German capital, filled with satisfaction over the vast stores of materials and raw materials of all kinds now at their disposal. What belonged to the French or English governments or armies automatically becomes German property. With France unable to trade with anybody but Germany and Italy, it is clear that Germany and Italy will be able to make the best of uses of these reserves. A small country like Denmark, for instance, has delivered goods to the Germans in the past 3 months to the tune of 200 million marks, or $80 million. The Germans have agreed to send coal and machinery to Denmark for this money. To date, the deliveries have been slow. But if small Denmark was able to make such deliveries, it is very easy to imagine how trade can be increased with rich France. Despite the stores available to Germany after the victories, German science is continuing to work on her self-sufficiency plans. A news service issued by Germany's traffic ministry asserts that, quote, "Germany has achieved self-sufficiency in the most important foods. Nevertheless, in the whole country, fields and stray corners that are not being exploited must now be cultivated to increase Germany's food reserves," unquote. To increase Germany's textile reserves, scientists have perfected a new type of cellulose made out of potato stalks and straw from wheat and rye. The scientists declare that the cellulose made out of potato stalks is excellent for the manufacture of artificial silk and synthetic wool. At the same time, the Germans worked out a scheme which provides provides for fast-growing poplars, which yield 6 times as much cellulose to the acre than other tree varieties, which, if the scientists are to be believed, means that Germany's cellulose and indirectly textile requirements can easily be satisfied within the provisions of Germany's self-sufficiency program, and that she won't need cotton from America or other countries. This was Sigrid Schultz speaking to you from Berlin for Mutual Broadcasting System. I now return you to America.
Sigrid Schultz, correspondent for the Chicago Tribune and Mutual's American reporter in Berlin, Germany, has reported her observations on the war situation. The Transcription Orchestra plays Clair de Lune by Claude Debussy.